Ladies and gentlemen, tonight's topic is called, Do I Really Need to Buy Kosher Cheese? The story goes like this. You could go across the street to Key Food and you will see a lot of cheeses that look really, really good and have really sketchy hashgachas that I don't think anyone knows what they are. These are like some West Coast hashgachas and people just don't know what these are. And the question is, well, who the heck cares? Because it's cheese. What goes into cheese? Well, milk, right? Milk goes into cheese. The way cheese is made is that you have to coagulate the milk. Basically, you take an enzyme. The enzyme is called rennet. Rennet is found most often in the fourth stomach of a young calf. The young calf generally nurses from the mother. There is milk in the calf's stomach. That milk is very acidic, it's very sharp, it's very strong stuff. If you pour other milk into that milk, so then that the new milk that was poured in will harden and will become cheese. That is the way cheese was traditionally made. Now, if I make cheese that way, so effectively there shouldn't be much of a problem. Because I'm making the cheese with the item that's inside the stomach, that item is halachically considered digested, it's probably not a problem. The problem is that people often would make cheese not with the milk that was digested in the stomach, but what they would do is they'd make cheese with the actual stomach skin. Now, we'll talk in a few minutes if this is the way cheese is made in the year 2013, and the answer is no. But they tell stories about people who came over from Switzerland. And when you came over from Switzerland, you had one of two professions. Either you were a watchmaker or you were a cheesemaker. Apparently, no one in Switzerland did anything else besides making watches and making cheese.
A bone surgeon.
Okay, that's unusual. Okay. But usually, people would come over and they brought over skins of animals, the stomach skins of animals, and that is a very valuable thing because you snip off a tiny bit, you throw it into an entire vat of milk,
like sourdough,
and chick chock boom, you end up with cheese. That is the way cheese was made. Now, are there halachic problems with cheese that's made this way?
So what kind of animals come from this stuff?
So what kind of animal does it come from? Okay, so there's a few possibilities. A kosher animal and a treif animal. Right? So, let's talk. If it comes from a kosher animal, what possible problem would there be?
Basar
b'chalof, no? It's milk and meat, isn't
could
it? I have milk. And I have the stomach of, like, that skin of the stomach of a calf. That sounds like milk and meat. So halachically, we paskin that that's not a problem with basar b'chalof. If you use a kosher skin,
the skin of a kosher animal,
if the animal was shechted properly, right? If you have an animal that's a cow, but the animal was killed, right? So that's still treif. That's called a nevela. But if I have a kosher animal that was shechted properly, so you are halachically perfectly allowed to make cheese from that. It's not a problem of basar b'chalav because it's cold, right? One of the fundamental ideas we developed in basar b'chalav is that it's got to be hot. This ain't hot. This is cold. So therefore, it's not going to be basar b'chalav. Yeah. It is sharp, so maybe the sharpness would be a problem. So the poskim assume that it's not considered sharp enough that the sharpness would be a problem. Again, I have to move my hands a lot because I can't really explain it with my mouth and with words. So we just, like, do this and we try to, right, come up with something.
But it's the end. If you put a piece of it in, it's not, you know...
So I put a piece of it in, but then I remove that skin when I'm done,
uh-huh.
Right? So it's just the enzyme that is really being given off, the rennet. So
not
we paskin... What?
Not even 1/60.
It's not even a 60th, but usually in halacha there's a principle called a davar hama'amid. Davar hama'amid means that if I have a substance, that completely transforms something else. So even though there's less than a 60th, it still is going to be asur, no? So maybe the cheese should be asur because the meat in the skin is completely transforming that milk. It changes it from being a liquid to a solid. It's like magic, no? So maybe it should be forbidden based on this rule of Davar HaMa'amid. So for that, the poskim say that it's only considered Davar HaMa'amid if it is something that is intrinsically forbidden. You see, milk and meat is unique. There are two kosher items, and you mix them together, it becomes treif. No? Usually when I add kosher to kosher, I have more kosher.
Right.
Right? Milk and meat is like a rare type of thing. I add one kosher item. There's only one other example of this. Who wants to guess? I add one kosher item to another kosher item, it becomes treif.
Honey.
A shatnez, kelayim, right?
Oh, of course.
I have, like, wool. I'm allowed to wear a wool suit. I'm allowed to wear a linen suit, although fashionably it's, like, not good for rabbis to wear linen suits. But the fact is...
At least not unless it's fall.
Especially not this time of year. Right? But the fact is that if I mix it together, the two kosher items, it becomes treif. That's like the chiddush of basar b'chol. That's what's unique. That's what breaks all the rules. So because basar b'cholav, the milk is kosher and the meat is kosher, so this rule of davar hama'amid, this rule that if I have something that completely transforms it into something else, it becomes non-kosher, that rule does not apply to basar b'cholav, because basar b'cholav, each entity, each ingredient in the mixture on its own is kosher. That is the stage. That's what the Rishonim discussed. The Taz, on the top of the second page, basically gives us a brief summary of what we said until now, that if I make cheese from a kosher skin, right, a kosher animal that's properly shechted by a Jew who's wearing long white socks, or else it doesn't count, avo mishum basa b'cholav, there's no iser de oraisa, reason one ditzoninu, because it's cold. But there's no iser de oraisa, and because it's cold, right, and because it's cold, we assume it's not even an iser de rabbanon, in this case. That's what you have to say, no? Or else all cheese is treif. We don't want cheese to be treif. But afagav dekam ma'amid, ein iser elamid rabbanon, that's a tosis, and the Torah of Adam writes that the Rimagash asks, right, maybe it should be bata b'shishim, etc., right, and he gives a whole fancy reason. So the basic idea is that the cheese that's made from a kosher stomach, that cheese is going to be kosher. Cheese that is made from a treif animal stomach, either a pig stomach or a cow that was not slaughtered properly, such cheese is non-kosher because the non-kosher meat is transforming the milk and it's making it treif. Now, today, how do we make cheese today? So today you could go to a store and you could buy a bottle of rennet. The rennet is most likely synthetic. If you buy really expensive cheeses, it's made from real cow stomachs and stuff like that. But if you buy regular cheese, it's made with a chemical that approximates what the acid that's inside a cow's stomach does. And that is how cheese is made today. So what on earth could be the problem with our cheese today? Why would I need any hashgacha? I know, pretty much, unless I'm buying expensive cheese, I know that it's not made with the stomach of a treif cow.
Chol of Yisrael?
Chol of Yisrael. So let's say you are a good, modern Orthodox Jew who holds like Rav Moshe Feinstein and the Chazon Ish, and you assume that the government supervision is good enough. That we'll talk about next week, probably. Government supervision is good enough, so what would be the problem?
Do they ever put any other ingredients in the cheese?
Yeah, they do.
Well, how do they get
inside
different
the
kinds
rennet,
of
they add, there's about 0.1% of glycerin.
I mean, like flavorings.
So, yeah, they do add flavorings.
I mean, how
cheese.
Do you get different kinds
right,
of
so,
cheese?
So the different kinds of cheeses come because cheeses are in it after I put the rennet in. It depends how much rennet I put in. It depends how long I leave it in the vat. Then they have these processes called ripening of the cheese. They cook the cheeses at different temperatures. They leave them to age for a different amount of times. It's almost lahavdo like wine and whiskey, right? That part of the difference is just the amount of time. But they also can add some flavoring. Some of the flavorings in Kraft cheeses are genuinely treif. They can add some grape derivatives. I have no idea why on earth they would do that.
But probably got something.
They do it.
Huh? You also said that they cook it.
So they cook it. So is the cooking going to be a problem of Bishul Akum? Probably not, because it would probably be edible without the cooking.
No, but it could be in a kli that previously...
It could be, but they cook it in a... See, when cheese used to be part of the expression, the cottage industry, so then they would do it at home,
cheese.
And then they had to be worried that they are cooking it in the pot that they just used to cook their pig. But today, they cook stuff in factories, and the factory only makes cheese, no? Apparently, you could go online, it's like the most boring website on the planet, and you could watch some Irish cheese you could watch some big clump of Irish cheese mature in Ireland, and like it grows over time. And people like sit there and they're like addicted to this stupid piece of cheese, and like every year it grows like half an inch or something, and it's like the most exciting thing ever, and like they make a party for every like new cheese molecule birthday. I don't know what
this
they do.
This is like
there.
Watching the grass grow. Right?
It's probably more boring.
What's the difference between cottage cheese
So we'll talk about cottage cheese in a few minutes. Cottage cheese is a soft cheese. Cottage cheese technically does not need any enzyme. Cottage cheese is the equivalent, in theory, of sour milk.
Right.
There used to be something called Zuyermilk, which is sour milk. That's really what cottage cheese should be. We'll talk about cottage cheese later on. So what on earth could be the problem of the cheese? So the Gemara says that there's a problem, Gavina Sakum. The Gemara says there's a problem, no? The Gemara, though, is not clear what the reason is. In fact, this is one of the funniest Mishnayos and Gemaras in Shas. Funny in the sense of, like, you really get an impression that the rabbis are hiding something here, because they are. This is a case that the rabbis are hiding. I'm Rabbi Yehuda. This is a Mishnah in Avodah Zarah Chafetz. Sha'ar Rabbi Yishmael Rabbi Yehoshua k'shahayu mahalchem ederech. Rabbi Yishmael asked Rabbi Yehoshua when they're taking a walk. Mipnei ma'asru gevinas ovdi kochavim. How come Goyish cheese is forbidden? Amar lo. He responded, Mipnei sh'ma'amidin osa b'keva shel nevela. Because they use the stomach of a non-kosher animal to make the cheese. Amar lo, v'alo kevas ola chamura mikevas nevela. V'amru, kohen shedato yafe, sarfo chaya, v'alo hardulo. In other words, a carbon ola, that milk that's inside the fourth stomach of a cow, a carbon ola is forbidden. Now the whole thing should be going up on the Mizbeach. But we say that the milk that's inside the fourth stomach of the cow, and that cow is supposed to go on the Mizbeach has a carbon ola. Kohen shedato yafa. Kohen, I guess, means like he's on some sort of, he's trying to get into a frat in college or something, so they challenge him to eat the stuff. That's the only way I can understand it. Right? Dato yafa, I think, is a euphemism. Right? Now, a Kohen could eat it if he wants to. He could eat the curdled milk inside the fourth stomach of a carbon ola cow, if he wants
on
to.
A dare.
I assume it's on a dare or whatever.
Fraternity.
You want to get to the fraternity or something. Right? But still, they say, don't do it. Amarlo, so he says, I have a different reason why the cheese is forbidden. Because they use stomachs of Avodah Zarah to make the cheese. Amarlo, Imkain lamalo asaru abahana. If they use the stomach of an avodah zarah, so then the cheese should not be forbidden to eat. It should be forbidden to derive any benefit from. Remember, avodah zarah is really bad. Avodah zarah, you can't get any benefit from. And if the prohibition of non-Jewish cheese is because we're worried that they're using the stomach of an avodah zarah cow, so then you shouldn't get any benefit. So listen to what he does. He see ol davar acher. He changes the topic. He starts talking about something else. He says, by the way, there's a pasuk in Shir HaShirim. How do you pronounce the word over there? Like, what the heck? Right? So he's totally changing the topic. So we don't know from the Mishnah why the cheese of the non-Jews is forbidden. The Mishnah says it's forbidden. We give two suggestions, and both suggestions are rejected. And then we start talking about, oh, by the way, the Knicks, you know, interesting basketball
team. How about
those
Mets?
Right, like totally out of left field. So the Gemara picks up on this. The Gemara says, "My taima." So really, why is it forbidden? Right. So listen to this. The rabbis are really hiding from us. Amar Ula v'itemir Rav Shmuel bar Abba gezera chadashahi ve'ein mefakbikin ba. This is a new decree, and therefore don't raise any objections to it. The rabbis did not want to give a reason. Because what happens when I give a reason? When I give a reason, I always have some guy in the back of the show saying, but maybe it doesn't apply, right? People are, you don't have to, know how to learn in order to ask a question. All you need is thumbs. Right? So that's what's going on over here, right? In other words, they say, it's Gezerah Hadoshi, it's a new decree, ve'im efak mikumbo, we don't want people to challenge it. So therefore, the rabbis didn't give a reason. This is called ruling by fiat.
Right.
Right? That's what they're doing. Well, but the Gemara, later on, you see, in the period of Mishnayos, they're not giving a reason. But later on, time has passed, and it's already been accepted that Jews don't eat non-Jewish cheese. So then they ask, what's the reason? My Gezerta. And there are five different reasons given in the Gemara. Or six reasons, but one of the reasons is rejected. Rashi rejects one, Tosis rejects a different, whatever. There's a Girsa issue here. But the reasons are, and I underline them, Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi says, Mishum Nikor. Nikor means that we are worried that a snake is going to put its venom into the cheese. Okay. Sounds like a good reason. Right?
Only non-Jewish cheese.
Right. Jews cover their liquids, because Jews are very worried about snakes. Non-Jews, snakes don't affect them. The Gemara has an expression which I can't say with a straight face, but the Gemara says that "Aydi da'achlish gutsim or musim chavil gufayhu," because they eat bugs all the time. Jews, you know, we don't eat bugs. We check our lettuce. Right, so we're healthy, and therefore when you experience a snake for the first time, you'll get really sick. But the non-Jews, they eat bugs all the time, so therefore they can handle it.
They're making
this is an amazing Gemara. The Chassam Sofer uses this Gemara, in fact, to argue, you know, in the history of medicine, autopsies weren't always done. Medical knowledge used to be, people would come about medical knowledge by, I don't know, sounds good. Right? That's the way. And even when they started doing autopsies, there was a great medical illustrator. When I was dating my wife, actually went to an exhibit, Velasquez. He was a famous medical illustrator. And his yesod was, he's looking at bodies, and he's drawing them. But he's drawing everything the way he thinks it looks, not the way it actually looks. Right? This is almost like the Dove commercials that came out this week. Right? But the idea is, right? No one has anything like, you know what I'm talking about, right? It's exactly the same thing, right? Because Velasquez would draw every female like an inverted male. Why?
What?
Because that's what females are supposed to look like. Now, you're looking at there. It's there. But Velasquez says, no, it doesn't matter. What I see doesn't matter. Right? That was, okay, so even what I'm trying to say is that originally they didn't do autopsies. Even when they started working on dead bodies, on doing autopsies to get medical knowledge, still they would use their own beichsvaras, pardon the expression, in order to come up with what they think it should be. But the Chassam Sofer, around the time that they're getting real knowledge from autopsies, Chassam Sofer writes an interesting tshuva. He says, you know what, maybe we as halachists, however you pronounce it, can't rely on information gleaned from autopsies, because the Gemara says that non-Jews have different bodies than Jews have, because since they eat their bugs and stuff, so their bodies are all messed up, and their bodies are all different. Now, again, can I say this nicely? No. I don't know what it means, but there is a concept like that in the Gemara. Okay, it's out there. Fine. So the fact is, right, reason number one why non-Jewish cheese is forbidden is because we are worried that maybe snake venom got into the cheese. Reason number two why it's forbidden, lefishi e'afshar la belot tzuchi chalav, because with cheese, you're always going to have little particles of milk in it. And non-Jewish milk is non-kosher, because we're worried it might be pig milk. So I can't eat the cheese of a guy. Because maybe, right, cheese isn't always completely hard, right? Inside the hardness there is a little bit of milk, apparently, when they would make the cheese, it wasn't as uniform, right? So, there might be some milk. Or they use arkebas nevela. That's the famous reason, that they use not the keva, not the milk in the stomach, but they use the arkebas nevela. They use the skin of the stomach, not the milk in the stomach. Reason number four, machlikim paneha b'shuman chazir. Right? That we understand. They take the ubiquitous chazir schmaltz, and they rub it on the cheese. Right? Chazir schmaltz is treif, right? We know that. Agreed? Fine, got it. Rav Chisda says, because they use vinegar to make their cheese. Vinegar comes from wine. Wine of non-Jews is treif. So their cheese will be treif. It comes from vinegar. Rav Nachman Yitzchak gives a reason, because they use sraf arla. They use sap from a tree within the first 3 years, and therefore, fine. That's what the Gemara says. Reasons number 5 and 6, or 6 and 7, however we're counting over here, are rejected in the continuation of the Gemara. So what's the real reason?
Why aren't we afraid that the cheese, the milk, came from a non-kosher animal?
Why are we not afraid the milk came from non-kosher animals? So the Gemara has a principle that we have no idea what it comports with in reality. The Gemara says that cholav behema tmeya is not mamid. The milk of a camel, or the milk of a sow, will not make cheese, the Gemara says. Now, this is patently false. The Gemara says it, but there is milk that is made from... you can make cheese from a camel's milk. It's doable. It's been done.
Had it been done 2,000 years ago?
No, probably not. But they probably could have.
It wasn't the usual practice.
But the fact is the Gemara says this principle, that we're not worried that the milk that's used in my cheese is going to be sow milk, because sow milk can't possibly coagulate and become cheese. That's what the Gemara says. Cholav behema tmeya einoi mamed. Now.
And that is incorrect?
It's incorrect today, yeah. Factually, it's incorrect.
Maybe they were worried about cholesterol.
No, I heard not so long ago somebody giving that as a reason.
Maybe. Don't know.
Okay.
So the Gemara has a bunch of reasons why the cheese is forbidden. Which reason's the real reason?
Sorry.
So Rabbeinu Tam says like this. Look in the Tosfos in Avodah Zarah. Rabbeinu Tam is really lenient. But Omer Rabbeinu Tam... Ki achshav lo matzinu tam pashut le'iser bigvinas ha'akum. We don't have a simple reason to forbid the cheese of non-Jews. Da tam ha'iser is mishum nikur, k'reb Yoshua ben Levi. The real reason is because of nikur. What's nikur? The snake venom. Now, tell me, is anyone here, maybe you, because you're like into the Vilna Gaon and stuff, do you drink water that was left exposed for more than a second?
Well, I stopped at a certain point in my life, but overnight, I'm most mocked at
them. You serious?
It's a cup sitting out overnight, I try not to drink it.
Okay, so I think most of us are not nearly as devout as you.
I don't. I thought that was in my friend's extended practice that you don't.
That's just about housekeeping.
Okay, so that might be because I leave it overnight. Maybe who knows what's going to get in there.
Oh, the cockroaches.
Right?
You author the Shulchan Aruch, the snakes don't exist like this anymore.
Right, Shulchan Aruch says that we're not worried. Right? In other words, according to the din in the Gemara, if I leave a liquid exposed even for a brief second, I'm worried that if I turn around, I'm worried that the snake jumped in and out and put its venom in. And they have all these complicated rules about how you can snake-proof your cups. It sounds like something out of Hogwarts. I don't know exactly.
Yeah.
But the fact is, most people, I think, are not machmir on this.
I was also told that they haven't yet to find a species of snake that can deposit the venom without biting into something.
Uh-huh.
So just putting its mouth into liquid, it seems that the trigger or whatever they have, the mechanism doesn't work.
That's
another problem to the problem.
And the Gemara has a whole sugya about what happens to the snake venom. Does the snake venom sink to the bottom? Does it stay at the top? Again,
did they ever actually observe a snake doing this?
Again, these people lived in Iraq.
Yeah.
Okay.
There are lots of snakes in Iraq.
Okay.
Right?
We live in New York City.
Right, we have rats. We don't have snakes. Totally different.
Close call.
Much safer here.
Close call.
They like cheese.
Rats?
I
Nice.
You bait a mousetrap as a cheese.
It's true.
No, you bet it with peanut butter.
Okay, whatever. These issues I leave for the Heights veterans. Now.
Please work.
So Rabbeinu Tam thinks that the real reason for the prohibition of non-Jewish cheese is because of the snake venom, and therefore he says that since today we don't have snakes around, so the cheese should be permitted. Rabbeinu Tam was willing to eat what we would call goyish cheese, providing you know that they are not... that they are not being ma'amid the cheese, they're not coagulating the milk to make the cheese with the stomachs of non-kosher animals. And in many communities, they used to be ma'amid with asavim. They would use certain types of flowers to make cheese. And therefore, or prachim, right, they use flowers. So therefore, the Rabbeinu Tam says, right, here, look in the... underline parts. The real reason is because of Nikor. We don't have snakes, therefore we're not worried about exposing the liquids. Now Rabbeinu Tam says, one second. So what if I don't have snakes around? We have a principle in Shas of Darish HaBeminyan. That means when a group of rabbis enact a law, so you can't, what? You can't get rid of that law, right? Unless you have a greater Bezdin, a Bezdin that is greater in stature and in number. And that ain't going to happen, right? Because we generally, well, I don't know by definition. It's a good question. Menachem Kellner wrote an entire book as to whether this concept of the decline of generations is an authentic Jewish concept. I once got in trouble when I was in high school, ninth grade. We were learning Maseches Gittin. So the Gemara has a line that in earlier generations were not Baki in Lashma, and in later generations they knew that a get has to be written Lashma. That a get has to be written for the woman who's getting divorced, for the specific woman. So I raised my hand, I asked my ninth grade Rebbe, well, doesn't this prove that the concept Niskatnu Hadoros isn't true? So my ninth grade Rebbe kicked me out of class. Now, years later, when I'm in college, I read Kellner, and I'm right! So I should call Rabbi Klein Kaufman back, but I don't think it would mean very much to him.
Which book is of Kellner's is this?
It's called Maimonides on the Decline of Generations.
Oh.
That's the book. It's an interesting topic, but like we're generally trained that the closer you are to Sinai, right, they all tell that awful story with Yaakov Kamenetsky on the plane.
Which story?
Right? You know what I'm talking about? That he's sitting next to a grandson on the plane, and his grandson is so respectful and treating him so well, and there's like a non-Jew sitting next to him, and the non-Jew's grandchild is not treating him as well. So the two gentlemen have a conversation. How come Rav Yaakov's grandson is treating him well and the other one's grandson isn't? So Rav Yaakov said, well, we Jews believe in the concept of Niskatnu Hadoros. In other words, we believe that the closer we are to Sinai, the better we are. So I'm two generations closer to Sinai, so my grandson respects me. But you believe in evolution, and you believe that you descend from apes. That's really insulting. That's really right, but is that the way the story goes?
Well, what's the rest of it? So
that's the end of the story.
Did it come to blows?
Okay.
There were no fisticuffs?
But the fact is, Rabbeinu Tam is saying that maybe we should prohibit, even though they make cheese in his country with grass, maybe we should still prohibit it because it's a davar shebeminyan, because it was an enactment, and you can't get rid of an enactment unless there's a greater bezdin. So, zakta Rabbeinu Tam, that's not true. Ki vada kesha asu tchilu lo asu abamakam shana chashim mitzuyin, kimo shafarish lakaman. He says that no, that can't be, because he'll explain later on that it was never a full-fledged enactment, it was just a precautionary measure. They never said that water that's left out is forbidden. They said, as a precaution, don't drink it. Consequently, in places where there are no snakes, it was always permitted. And then he writes, there are many places that they eat the non-Jewish cheeses, because Shema Midin Otam Beprachim, V'gam Ga'one Narvona Hitira Osam Bimkoman, Mitan Shema Midin Osam Beprachim. So Rabbeinu Tam, Tosfos is reporting a practice that there were Jews who ate regular non-Jewish cheese, because they felt the main reason for the prohibition is is the snake venom. Rambam, however, takes a decidedly different approach on 2 points. The Rambam next source holds that the real reason for the prohibition of non-Jewish cheeses is Givinat Akamuteret, why she'ein chala behematmeh mitgabein. You see that? The milk of a treif animal does not mitgabein, does not cheesify. There has to be a better word than cheesify, but that's what we'll say. Aval, b'mechach me mishnah, gozu agvinas akum v'asarum, v'mneshma midim otava ar keva, shoshkita tan shehina ve'la. In other words, the Rambam says that the reason is because they use the skin of the non-kosher shechted cow. V'im tomar, it's a very small thing. He says it can't be bottle because it's the mamet, even though it's a tiny amount, but it changes the entire structure, so even though it's less than a 60th, it's not going to be bottle. And since the davar aser is mamet, so the whole thing is aser. Now within the Rambam, you do not see that cheese that is made in a community that is mamey cheese with flowers is permitted. The Rambam assumes it's a low plug, no? Low plug means it's clear across the board. So there are 2 points of disagreement between the Rambam and the Rabbeinu Tam. Right? Rabbeinu Tam says the reason is because of the snake venom. Rambam says the reason is because of the skin of the stomach. Rabbeinu Tam says the prohibition was a precautionary measure, and therefore in a place that it definitely does not, that the reasons don't apply, it's permitted. But the Rambam says the prohibition applies everywhere, no matter what. Right? That's basically the dispute between the Rambam and the Rabbeinu Tam. Shulchan Aruch, Rabbi Yosef Karo, I should say, follows the Rambam. Givino ta'akum, asarum neshmamidim osam, ba'arkeva shkitasam shekhina vela. That's straight out of the Rambam, right? The reason for the prohibition is they use the skin of the animal. Va'afilu hamiduha ba'asavim asura. He adds, for clarity, that even if you know that they are using synthetic rennet, like we do in America, it still is forbidden, no? That's what the Rambam says. Hagah, the Rambam writes, v'chein haminhag ve'ein lefrotz geder. So is the practice, and don't disagree with this practice. Ve'ein lefrotz geder, don't break through the fence. Imlo b'makom shenahagu bo heter mikad monim, unless you live in a place that they have always been eating non-Jewish cheeses. Apparently, at the time of the Rambam, remember, Rambam dies in 1572, right? Rabbi Yosef Karo was born earlier and died later. Rabbi Yosef Karo is 1586 to 1576. 1488 until 15. Right, thank you. 1576. The Rambam probably was born in 1530, maybe 1525, and died in 1572. Rambam died a very young man, no? May have been 42. Mm. Right, for all of us pushing that age, it's a scary thought. So, okay, that's what it is. Now, I'm an old man, right? But so now.
The Rambam says it's okay nowadays. It's only B'mei HaMishnah. Look at the beginning.
No, the Rambam says at the time of the Mishnah, they made the prohibition.
Yeah.
At the time of the Mishnah, they made the prohibition. He does not say that prohibition was ever relaxed.
But this is agreement for Akam Muteris. That's how it begins.
No, on the level of D'oraisa, it's permitted because non-kosher species won't make cheese. But at the time of the Mishnah, they said it was forbidden, right? And once it's forbidden for the Rambam, it's forbidden in all times, all places. There is no wiggle room. The Rambam writes that if you live in a community where people are noheg heter mikadmonim, where people have been lenient on non-Jewish cheeses, then you have a right to be lenient. Now, okay, this Rama is not quoted in the standard works of synopsis on Shulchan Aruch. The Levush and the Chochmas Adam are the two standard works that summarize the big book. And this line don't make it. Even so, there is a tradition in certain families that they eat regular non-kosher cheese. Rav Soloveitchik used to report that in his family they had this tradition. But then they found out that the cheese in America is mixed with real treif ingredients, and they stopped eating it. So, I don't know anybody. I don't know anybody who really will eat cheese. Again, even though we know, first of all, today it's very hard to know that they're using synthetic rennet, although the cheaper cheeses probably are, but it's hard to know for sure. But even if you would know for sure that they're using synthetic rennet, the Rambam says it's forbidden. Because even if they make cheese with flowers, it's forbidden, according to the Rambam. There's a low plug. Clear across the board, all non-Jewish cheese is prohibited. End of discussion. Good? This is why the conservative movement's tshuva about cheese is very questionable. There was a Isaac Klein. Isaac Klein was... I have to thank Rabbi Noah Bickart, who is my my research assistant when it comes to this type of stuff. I just don't know. I know how to find stuff in the sphere I'm used to looking in, but I don't know how to find conservative response so well. Rabbi... What? Baruch Hashem, right? So Rabbi Bickart sent me this tshuva of Isaac Klein, who was the rabbi emeritus of a temple Shari Tefillah in Buffalo, New York, and he was a visiting associate professor in JTS. He wrote a tshuva.
When was this tshuva?
In the 40s.
Didn't he write that big standard book called like, Something About God's Jewish Practice or something that's very close to...
I don't know. Now, he was very learned.
And he was very...
Isaac Klein was clearly very learned. He writes a tshuva. It's interesting. He writes that in May of 1945, he's in Amsterdam, and they got report that the rabbi of Amsterdam pre-war, whose name was a Rabbi Justus Tal, he had been the rabbi of Utrecht, and they got a report that he was alive, that he survived when he was in Amsterdam. And Rabbi Klein, who was an army chaplain, went to visit him. And he gets in, the man is terribly emaciated, and Rabbi Tal says, I heard that cheese is very good for people in my condition. Do you have any cheese? So Rabbi Klein is, sure, I have cheese. So Rabbi Tal says, does the cheese have a reliable hashgacha? Now, this floored Rabbi Klein. He's like, you're...
Yeah.
Right? Yeah. What are you worried about hashgacha? But he takes it out, and he looks at the cheese, and says, this cheese is under the supervision of Rabbi Joseph Breuer.
Well, it doesn't get better than that.
I don't know if it's reliable, but that's what it said. Right? It says that the cheese on the supervision of Rabbi Breuer, so Rabbi Tal ate the cheese, and this led to Rabbi Klein going through the sugya and thinking about the kashrus of cheese, whether cheese needs to be kosher, and basically his conclusion is as follows. He says that he visited all the cheese factories around Buffalo, and then they sent him to the real cheese factories, which are in Wisconsin, right? And he noted that the way the cheese is made is either from the skin of the animal, but after the skin is seriously dried, to the point that the Rambam writes at the beginning of Yoridei, at the beginning of Basar B'chol, being a Pezayin, that if it's Yavesh Ke'etz, if it's as dry as wood, then it's going to be permitted. That's point one. Point two he has is that those cheeses that are not made from this are made from some synthetic rennet. And the synthetic rennet, although it comes from the stomach of a cow originally, but it undergoes so many chemical changes, he's convinced it's permitted. And he says, since today the cheese is made from synthetic rennet or from the stomach cavities after they've been completely dried, cheese in America is absolutely kosher, you don't need hashgacha. Now this is a nice tshuva, it's a good research, but it's beferish against Shulchan Aruch and against the Rambam. Because the Rambam is saying that even if you know that the entire community is making cheese with asavim, right? We don't follow the Chachmei Narbona that Tosis quoted. We assume even if the entire community is making cheese from grass, it still is going to be forbidden, because it's a low plug. And Rabbi Klein, again, just ignores it. He just ignores it. It's a very well-written tshuva, but... I think he's just totally, you know, he gets so involved in doing research as to exactly how they make the rennet today that he just misses out on this very fundamental point. Okay, so now, for us, right, so what does it take to make cheese kosher? So there is a dispute between the Ramah and the Shach. Okay, this will take us two more minutes on this point, then one more minute about cottage cheese, and we're done. So we're almost done, right? That means we'll be out in 10, based on my math. But the fact is, okay, the fact is like this. So if you know that everything in the country is made with a synthetic rennet, it still is forbidden. The only time it's permitted, according to the Ramah, is im haYisrael ro'eh asiyas hagvina v'chaliva, if the Jew sees it. A Jew sees it. That's what the Ramah says. The Shach disagrees with the Ramah. It's a long Shach, Sifkat and Chaf, and they underline the key part. The Shach says just seeing them make the cheese isn't enough. The Jew has got to throw the piece of rennet into the vat of milk. Okay? It's sort of like a machlokes, because by Bishul Akam, everyone knows the Jew has to do something. The question is how much. Here also, but according to Ramah, the Jew doesn't have to do anything. The Jew's just watching. Right? But according to the Shach, the Jew has to throw it in. The minhag in many communities is that they follow the Ramah. The Pischei Tshuva follows the Ramah. All the Jew has to do is see the making of the cheese. You don't follow we don't have to follow the Shach, you have to actually make it. In Breuer's, there are two different cheeses under the Kehillah's Hashkocha. There is Ha'olam and Migdal. Right? The difference is Machlokes, Shach, and Ramah.
No, really.
Right? The Ha'olam cheese has a Jew actually throw it in the vent. The Migdal cheese doesn't. Right?
But they give
again. That's I haven't looked into that. That's just what I heard through the grapevine. I'm not 100% sure about
that.
Are
they made in Wisconsin?
I don't know. I assume it's made in the factory in New York.
Thurum was in Switzerland, right? They used to have Thurum.
Oh yeah.
Schmerling Swiss cheese. Yeah.
Isn't right. There Schnaut cheese?
I'm not sure.
Yeah. When you say non-Jewish cheese, what defines it initially as non-Jewish? That it's owned?
Okay, so that's also a dispute among poskim. If a non-Jew owns it, yes. The question is, what about if a Jew owns it? And so the Shach himself, who says that the Jew has to make the cheese, the Shach is willing to be lenient if a Jew owns it. So then all you need is that the Jew watches the cheese-making process. And the Pischei Tshuva is even mekel. The Jew doesn't have to own the cheese. All the Jew has to own is the rennet. So there are many communities that the job of a mashgiach is he goes to the company with his own rennet. He says, here, use this rennet to make the cheese. And that's what makes the cheese kosher. Many hashgachas rely on that.
Well, but let's say Kraft. I probably own part of Kraft. Is it a publicly traded company?
Yeah. I think publicly owned companies generally, that's like the Chometz Shaila now. I happen to be, I think everyone is make on this. Everyone buys Chometz in Costco now. No? Again, I'm not sure what they do down the street. But the fact is, publicly held companies, we assume that it depends who has the controlling interest. Mm.
And you don't.
For this purpose as well.
If you own your 10 shares of Kraft, you probably don't have a controlling interest in the company.
Where's Costco?
Right? Costco's publicly held.
No, where is it?
In Hackensack. In the city. Okay. Fine.
Oh, isn't there one over in Harlem or something?
Yeah, there's one on like 125th.
Yeah.
116th. 116th, yeah.
Fine, now. Butter, is that a separate Indian?
Butter is a separate topic. We might talk about butter one of these weeks. I'd rather talk about milk and then butter. Okay, but whatever. So that's the machlokes between the Ramah and the Shach. Does the Jew have to make the cheese, or is enough if the Jew watches the cheese be made? Now, what about cottage cheese, soft cheese? Is soft cheese considered cheese or not? So Rav Moshe Feinstein in the Tshuva, that is written, again, everything is in the neighborhood. The Inyan Gevina B'Shem cottage cheese, is it included in Gevina Achra? Malas Kvod Yedidi HaRav Hagon Rav Shimon Schwab. Apparently, Rabbi Schwab once wanted to give a speech. Do you remember this? He once gave a speech in the community telling people not to eat friendship cottage cheese.
What?
Huh?
Could
you
be.
Were there?
No,
it could
I mean,
be. Oh. It could be. Very possible.
It was more like he.
What was the matter with...
Is it more like K?
Okay.
If you don't, they cull off your swirl. I mean.
Oh, okay. So we'll talk about that in a second.
What was the matter with French?
So friendship cottages, I think, now has an OU. But the issue is like this. Soft cheese that has an OU. There is no Jew in the factory who watches them make the cheese. In the friendship factory, there is no Jew. There's no Jew there watching it. In the hard cheese factories, they have a Jew, Mashgiach, who watches it made. In the soft cheese factories, they rely on the fact that soft cheese is not halachically cheese. That's what they rely on. Now, the assumption is, based on what Rav Moshe has in this tshuva, that to be cheese, it has to be the type of cheese that you make in the stomach cavity of an animal, which is hard cheese. Any soft cheese, Rav Moshe says, might not be considered cheese, but Rav Moshe doesn't really conclude this way. If you look at the last five lines of the tshuva, Rav Moshe says, Mikom makom lemaaseh eini omer bazeh heter, aval gam eini mocheh b'hamekilim. He says, I don't permit it, but I also don't forbid it. I don't protest against those who are lenient, since there is a reason to be matir, and it's an issur d'rabbanan, etc., etc. So the issue with the soft cheese is that Rav Moshe says that it's really a suffix. You see, soft cheese, you would get that same consistency if I just take milk and I leave it out in the sun, like, for a long time. So the milk would separate into curds and whey, like Little Miss Muffet would have it. Right? That's the way... Now, you're going to try this at home and it ain't going to work. You know why?
It's going to get moldy.
No, actually...
No. Better reason, because our milk is pasteurized.
Right.
Once your milk is pasteurized, you cannot possibly leave it in the sun to just have it separate to curds and whey. But Rav Moshe finds and says like this. Rav Moshe says that he thinks since soft cheese doesn't really require any rennet, because you'd leave it in the sun for a long enough time, it would separate. The only reason why they're adding the rennet in the cottage cheese is to speed up the process, but the same thing would occur over time. So therefore, Rav Moshe says, maybe it's not halachically cheese. So in this book, Chelkas Binyamin, this is by Reb Fivel Cohen's son, Reb Binyamin Cohen. He's a posek, he's actually a Rosh Kolal on Chai in Berlin. He's a posek in Brooklyn. Very fine Talmud Chacham. So he says, whoa, hold it. Today our milk is pasteurized, and therefore without adding rennet to that milk, it ain't never gonna become cheese. So he goes back and forth, he hems and haws, he says, well, maybe what you're doing by adding the rennet is you're just removing the effects of the pasteurization, and you're accomplishing the same thing that would have been accomplished. Right? That's his argument. Then he writes at the end, which I think is a true point, is that, well, in the cottage cheese, after the cheese is made, they add more milk to it. So those people who are machmir on Chol of Yisrael, which we'll talk about next week, those who are machmir on Chol of Yisrael, he says, should not use the cottage cheese. Even though those who are machmir on Chol of Yisrael would be okay to eat regular cheese, because we have this principle that, remember, Chol of Yisrael is because maybe the milk is from a sow. But the Gemara says you can't make cheese from a sow. So therefore, you don't need Chol of Yisrael milk to make your cheese, right?
There's Mashgiach anyway, you're saying.
There's Mashgiach there watching the process, but no Mashgiach there who watched the milk, the milking of the cow, in most cases. But, and we'll have to talk about the details of that point also. The minhag is to be machmer in that question, although no one is sure exactly why. The minhag is that those people who only drink Chol of Yisrael milk only use Chol of Yisrael milk in their cheese also. But no one is exactly sure.
Mahadrin.
What?
Cottage cheese or any cheese?
Any cheese.
Mahadrin.
The Mahadrin, I think, uses Chol of Yisrael milk to make their cheese. But the fact is, the cottage cheese today, they add milk in after. So therefore, if you are Mahadrin Chol of Yisrael, so the cottage cheese would be a problem because they're adding the milk. That's his conclusion. Again, it's not exactly clear why kashrus agencies in America are lenient on cottage cheese without having people watch the actual cheese-making process. They don't even use the Rama of watching it. It's interesting because even Rav Moshe Feinstein, who's lenient, isn't really lenient. Rav Moshe isn't willing to say it's permitted. He says, I won't protest those who eat it.
Then yogurt?
So yogurt should be the same. Yogurt and cream cheese. Yogurt same. Is a discussion in the Radvaz. It should be the same as cottage cheese. It's a slight churning process. Apparently, if you would leave it in the right temperature, you can make yogurt out of plain milk without an enzyme. That's like the same as sour milk. Cream cheese also, Rav Moshe has the same question about cream cheese that he has about cottage cheese. But again, Rav Moshe really leaves it as a question. So these are some of the issues relating to kosher cheese. My opinion is that those cheeses with sketchy hashgachas, you really should avoid. In other words, cheese needs hashgacha. That's what you're paskin. We follow the Rambam in Shulchan Aruch. And what I've heard through the grapevine, I'm not sure, is that some of these sketchy hashgachas on cheeses rely on the fact that we know they are using synthetic rennet. And therefore, what could be bad? In other words, that's like Isaac Klein.
Uh-huh.
And I think the Rambam, again, if it's between the Rambam and Isaac Klein, I would vote with the Rambam. Yeah. Question?
I missed the piece. The rennet that they're putting in is from vegetable origin, or is it?
So they use either vegetable origin rennet, or they use rennet that comes from a cow, but it goes through so many chemical processes that completely loses its identity.
Or they put it in.
Right. Or they use some sort of synthetic. Now, again, completely losing its identity is not so simple either. Most kosher agencies in America don't use gelatin. Right? This is the big difference in kashrus in Israel and kashrus in America. In Israel, many hashgachas use gelatin. In America, none of the reliable hashgachas use gelatin. That's like one of the big differences between Rabbanut and Rabbanut Mahadran in Israel. At least in Yerushalayim. Again, other communities, I don't know about. At least in Yerushalayim, that's one of the big differences, that the Rabbanut will use gelatin. The Chaim Ozer is make on gelatin. The idea of gelatin is that they take the bones of an animal, they grind it up, they add acid, and then it comes back as like a Ferrari. So the basic thing is, because it's completely transformed, so Reb Chaim Moser says it's permitted, the same reason that Isaac Klein is giving to permit the rennet, but those who follow Reb Aaron Cutler in his dissent with Reb Chaim Moser about Reb Chaim Moser Vilna, right? Who makes it to, right? He makes it to Chaim Grada's book, Reb Chaim Moser.
Oh, which book?
The Yeshiva. Yeah, okay, not for now. But, okay, thank you for coming.